Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rehearsal Part. What, this? Oh, this is nothing. If you're listening on the audio, this just I've just got a big head on my desk. It's not the first big head I've had on this desk. You know what I'm saying? I've also put my own big head on there sometimes. Yeah, so what? I won Taskmaster, so what? Let's not make a big deal about it, everyone. Come on, just grow up. It's only a TV show. We don't need to go on about it all the time for the rest of our lives, okay? Champion of Champions in 2021. Let's see who wins that little baby. So thank you for all your support this year. Happy Christmas. We've got one more Rahala Stupper coming out this year, but this one is with the fantastic Rod Gilbert and is a really special one. It's very funny. He's very honest. I think he might be a little drunk. And I might be a little drunk. We'll see. Do support me if you can. Why not buy a copy of The Problem with Men if you haven't got one already? It's a brilliant late Christmas gift. It's a brilliant way to spend the book tokens that your auntie has sent you. It's £10.99 or something. It's probably a book, probably your £10 book token from your auntie Jean will do it. But you could become a monthly badger as well. Remember, at the end of year, monthly prize draw is up, and that's always a big one with lots of extra special things. Maybe my Taskmaster trophy will be one of the prizes. It will not. So become a badger. GoFasterStrike.com/badges. All your money goes back into making more content. We'll make more Rahalastapas. We'll make, like the way on the picture looks like it's got feet. It's got Greg's feet coming out the head. We will make more sketches for Twitch of fun. Hopefully in 2021 we can get out and actually make some sketches outside. Check out my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/rkherring. And remember, if you're with Amazon Prime, you can use your subscription and link your accounts to Amazon Gaming Twitch, and you can then give us £5 every month at no cost to yourself, and we get £3.50 of it, and £1.50 disappears. I don't know what happens to that, but that's a great way again to fund us and make sure we can keep making free podcasts for you to enjoy. Become a monthly badger, you get lots of extra interviews, prizes you can win, and stand-up shows you can watch, and a membership badge and a membership card. GoFasterStrike.com/badges if you want to join that and give us maybe £3 a month. More if you want. It's up to you. It's good. Anyway, have a lovely Christmas, my fine friends. I'm on The Chase on Christmas Day, 5 p.m. on ITV. Let's see how I do on that. Do I win a massive golden head of Bradley Walsh? We'll see. Let's come back next week to see if I have that. Thank you for watching. Let's sit back, relax, and listening, and enjoy Reha La Sterpa with Rod Gilbert. Hello, please welcome a man who's in Santa's grotto. It's Richard Herring. Hooray! It's Christmas. Nearly if you're watching it live, but much more nearly if you're listening to the podcast. Welcome to Richard Herring's Loosening Santa's Trousers podcast. Because he's eating so much, not because I'm trying to get into his bits and, you know, good way of getting extra presents, though, I guess. Though I was talking to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's Christmas-themed. Yesterday, he calls it Reha La Sterpa. Reha La Sterpa, stop saying that, you people over there. I've always found, and this is apropos of nothing, I was just thinking about this. I think the Rupert the Red-Nosed Reindeer song is deeply offensive and wrong. The other reindeer won't hang around with Rudolph because he's got a red nose and they think he's different. And then because Santa uses him to light his sleigh, suddenly they all love him, and that's okay. The end verse should be Rudolph says, fuck off all you other reindeer. You didn't like me when I wasn't famous and I'm not going to be your friend now. I'm going to rewrite that story and I'm going to turn it into an animated classic where Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is a bit more sweary. I had a picture of him. There he is. Look, there's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's nice, isn't it? So what's been going on this week? I've been acting in proper... film, a feature film. I think it's an independent one. I certainly didn't have a Winnebago or anything. We were filming in a church in Epping. It's unusual because I wasn't playing a paedophile or someone who uses sex workers. So even though I had this moustache and I look like I do, though in the second scene I did slightly perv over a woman young enough to be my daughter. So I suppose I was still typecast. When we were in the church in Epping... this has sort of stuck with me this week, and I've thought about it more. I forgot to take a photo of it, but in the vestry where our green room was, there was a little plaque up on the wall dedicated to a woman who'd worked in the church, right? I think in about 1950. I can't quite remember. And it had her name and said what her job was. And then the rest of the plaque, apart from that, said she had died 1 month short of her 95th birthday. And that just seemed an odd detail of all the things... you could put on a plaque to someone's life. She didn't mention any of her achievements, what she'd done at the church, whether she'd had anything exciting in her life. They could have just said she was 94. That would have still been... It's not like, oh my God, she got so close to being 95. What a tragedy she died. You know, 94 and 11 months and 95, it's the same, right? If it had been 100, then, oh, she nearly got to 100, but she didn't. What I'm saying, to have a plaque to her and then waste all the words on it on just saying... she very nearly got to be 95 years old, and that's all we find out. But that's her defining thing, not a kindness, not what she did for, not what she did for her family. Maybe they literally had nothing else to put. They had a number of words they had to get up there. They just couldn't. If we say she was 94, we have to come up with 9 more words about her 9.5 decades of life. Not quite 9.5, Simon. Good point. We can use it. I just felt it's tragic, and I think I'm going to go and try and find out this. I'm going to go back to the church. I'm going to find out what the woman's name is. I'm going to try and find out more about her life, and I'm going to make my own plaque with things from her life in it. It could be a new show. It could be that she just didn't have anything. I think maybe just someone had bought her a present for her 95th birthday, and it was probably quite an expensive one, and then she died, and they were fucked off, right? I think that's got to be the reason to it. But I've been thinking about it a lot, and I don't even remember her name because I didn't take a photo of it. What a world. Okay, what else has been going on? Oh, Taskmaster continues. That's me. I don't know why they chose me for the task where you had to do lots of different accents, and I was very good at it, so it all worked out all right. I overcame a 10-point deficit. I'm now 1 point in the lead with 2 shows to go. It couldn't be more exciting. It was again wanking in a bush was what I was typecast there as the acting by Greg Davis as well. So. I hope you're all enjoying that. I want to show you the power of Reha La Sterpa in that Kiel Bino Smith was on. Smith Bino was on the other week, and it hasn't even got his whole thing there. It's come off. Kiel Smith Bino was on the other week and didn't have a Wikipedia page, but now he's got a Wikipedia page, and that is the power of Reha La Sterpa. So thank you very much for those of you who did that. and joined in with that. So do tune in to Taskmaster on Thursdays. If you're listening to it live, you know what's... If you're listening to it on the 23rd of December, you know the result. But the people watching it live have no idea what has happened, how you can lord over those idiots in the past. Look, let's crack on. Buy my book. It's a perfect Christmas gift. You've got to buy it today to get it delivered tomorrow if it's the 23rd. That my guest this week is probably best known for being Wales' sexiest man of 2010. Will you please welcome the incredible Rod Gilbert, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. It's Rod Gilbert. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
2010 was a long time ago.
It was. I'm looking now and I'm going, those 10 years.
You're looking, Jesus Christ.
I mean, both of us, to be fair.
Yeah. Both of us. We're pretty much the same age, I realised today.
I think I'm a year and a couple of months older than you.
I think you're a bit older, clearly.
Yeah. It's the moustache. What do you think of the moustache? Think I should keep it? This was for a Movember and then for an acting role.
Do you dye it?
No, that's what I think's weird. Do you think it's because I just haven't grown that hair very much that there's a store of brown hair?
No, I don't understand hair at all. No. I haven't got any grey hair on my head, but then this is grey.
And you choose to? I would
dark,
choose
dark again.
Dark,
dark, dark, dark, dark, very dark, sinister.
Mine's going grey all. I'm going grey all over, but not the moustache. The beard has grey in it. When I have a beard, yeah.
Is it slightly gingery, your moustache?
No, I wouldn't say gingery.
I'm looking at... Let me maximise you.
Yeah. I'm taking it off tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah.
It's a Movember thing.
It was Movember, and then I just had... I've been redoing my driving instructor character who has a moustache. It made me think that I now look like this character I did 27 years ago, so I've brought back a 27-year-old character.
Rich, you do not... look anything like you did 27, honestly.
I was trying to play a middle-aged man then, so now...
Even if you were trying to play an octogenarian 27 years ago, you still look older now, honestly.
Well, when they
say that with love.
They put some white in it for the part that I did last week, and I looked like the octogenarian from a different Mr. Fun sketch, so... There we go. What happened with the set? Who decided that you were the sexiest man of 2010 and who voted for that?
Nobody voted.
I know it's in Wales, so it's a limited gene pool.
It is a very fucking low bar, if I say so myself. They rang me up. It was like the Western Mail. It's like a local paper. That's all it was. It wasn't voted for by any actual real people. It was just the local paper going, who's around at the moment? It's Bryn Terfel again. We can't have Bryn Terfel again. Tom Jones, Tom Jones still makes the top five, but I don't, 97.
It's nice. I don't know. It's nice to get, isn't it?
It's great. I had a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
Not from them. I was celebrating myself at home. What a day that was, honestly. 2010. What a year. What a day.
And then when you
were... Now look at everything.
When you weren't the sexiest man of 2011, though, did it hurt more that your star had fallen?
I think I was still in the teens.
Right.
So I was still quite happy. Okay. I think the following year, I was flicking through the pages. there must be some kind of mistake. I think I've dropped out completely. Oh. I'm not even sure if the paper's still going, to be honest.
Okay, well,
I think it was such a backlash.
How dare you give it to him? Oh, well, you're still looking good to me, Rod. I think, you know.
Oh, thank you, mate.
As men, not just at the moment for me. I'm wearing a Christmas jumper and I've got a moustache. And look terrible, but you know, as men, we get a little bit longer to bask in that light of sexiness.
Yeah, then, I mean, I think we get a little bit less pressure from birth to death. Is how it goes.
But I found it difficult because in this film, I was playing like a grown up woman's dad, and that is the first time I've ever played, I think, anyone's father apart from like babies and stuff like that. So,
how old was the woman?
She turned out she was 35. So she was playing.
You could be her dad.
She was playing 22 or something. Nick Helm was my son in it as well. So Nick Helm, who's 13 years younger than me, and I think looks a bit older than me.
I could see why you'd be. I would be insulted if TV dared to break the convention that 53-year-old men go out with 18-year-olds.
Yes. It's a shame.
How dare them cast you as a father, for fuck's sake. What's going on?
It's a shame I didn't get any of that. But it was quite, it was sort of a weird, you know, it's sort of that, are you feeling that as you get into your 50s of the past passage of time and the way that that's, you know, like there was a bit where I had to like be slightly saucy to some actress who was playing this, you know, giving out drinks at this party. And then you kind of go, well, I can do that, that's fine. And then you think, yeah, but from her point of view, I was made to look a bit older than I am. I am just a disgusting old, I'm still
disgusting.
In my head. I'm a reasonably sexy young man, but I'm a disgusting old man.
You are. You need to either take a photo of you. I mean, you could do it now if you want. Just have a look at your own picture there. Just stop talking for like, I don't know, no, maybe 5 to 10 seconds for it to sink in.
Yeah. Hold on, I'll take the glasses off. No, it's not. I think once the moustache is
disgusting.
Gone,
fucking disgusting.
It's disgusting. But is that hard? Do you find that? See, you know, both of us are.
Of course I do.
Both of us are in, I hope, happy relationships. I hope I am. And so I just want, I want young women to still find me attractive, but I don't want to do anything about it. That's.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't want to. I just want, I want them in Welsh newspapers.
You want
saying,
young people, you want young women to find you attractive?
Well, younger. I just want to be found attractive. I don't, older women as well. I want to be attractive still, and I'm not, and I find it difficult to...
How young are you talking?
Like someone who's 30 could say...
You're going to come up with one of these sayings about if there's...
Someone who's 30.
On the lawn or something.
I don't know what my cut-off point would be now, because I'm not in that game. You know, I did have a cut-off point when I was 40, but it was quite... It was
I'm just going to let you keep talking, Ruth. I'm just going to let you keep talking. Keep talking, mate. The
but now, you know, I think. But I also feel once you're past 40, you're in a different continent. To, you know, the continental drift between people in their 20s and 30s and people in their 40s and 50s is so far. There's no way back. I mean, some people do it.
I don't even hope that young women find me attractive.
Right.
I don't know when that stopped. But a long while ago. Fair play to you. No, I'm glad. It's good that you. It's good that you still want.
I just want to be. You know, I want to be young, but I'm not. I'm not young. That's it. That, I think the realization of playing a grown woman's dad, it hit me hard. It made me.
The thing is, as men though, we don't get the pressure that women get. So you still want young women to find you, but do you want older women to find to find you attractive?
Anyone, just any port in a storm, right?
So if anybody, somebody in their early 80s found you attractive, you'd be like, oh, great.
I would be pleased, and I'm not going to do anything about it. But I would go, it's nice that someone likes me still. I used to be, you know. I wasn't very confident as a young man.
I was a contender.
You were a very.
Do you know who I am?
You were a very shy young man, but I was. But looking back at myself, you know, I was all right looking. I was okay looking.
Yeah, you still are.
I'm okay looking, but you know.
I mean, you're not gorgeous, but you're all right.
I'm not gorgeous. Anyway, let's move on from that.
Yeah.
Well, have you used that thing about the woman that was? Did you hear me talking about the dedication to this woman and the being remembered just for dying a month before she turned 95?
Oh, I heard a bit of it. Yeah, what was it?
I just saw a dedication to a woman in a church. She'd worked at the church, and that all it said on the plaque was she died a month short of her 95th birthday, and that was her life. That, you know, that's the summing up of her life. I mean, it's not that big a deal to die a month short of your 95th birthday. And she must have done other things. Have you ever seen a worse dedication? Like, they've gone to the trouble of dedicating something to her and then just not saying anything about her.
Yeah, that is very, very, very... For somebody who's accomplished so much, that is pretty damn... That's reductive. That is reductive. Yeah. That's reducing her life to almost making it to 95. Was that it?
Yeah.
That's nothing else. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I didn't hear your bit there, but... Whatever it was, I 100% agree with it.
Yeah, it's terrible. Have you experienced anything like that? What's the worst thing you think they could say that if they were summing up your life, Rod Gilbert, and they had 10 words to sum it up? What's the worst thing they could say?
That is hard.
It is.
That is hard. I don't think I could beat that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of things people could say about me that I would accept. But I would be happy if anyone says anything, to be honest with you. If it's even marked, if my passing is even... I mean, I'm not on social media, but if there was just a tweet or something, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I think... I mean, you've probably got to die...
If my wife just put a tweet out, that would be enough for me.
Well, I sort of think, like, if anyone lives to, like, be 110, you're not going to get much back, you know. Everyone who knew you is going to be dead. If I lived to 110, no one will remark on my death. But if I could die in the next 2 or 3 years, probably get mentioned in The Guardian.
Yeah, definitely The Guardian.
Yeah.
Probably The Guardian.
Probably some people on Twitter go, "Oh, that I met him. It was all right. It's sad."
How would you feel if you died and the only mention you got was like in the Daily Mail? nobody else even remarked on your passing.
That would
nobody.
Be bad.
Like nobody, not even Twitter, nothing. So your site was just closed down by Twitter and that and Facebook and this just stopped.
Yeah.
Chris, your sound man, your producer, they just left it.
Yeah.
And the only thing was a couple of lines in the Daily Mail.
I mean, at least it's something, Rod. It's something.
Yeah, you're right. I'll take it.
You've got to take what you can get.
I'll take it.
So, look, I've been listening to your newish podcast. You got into the podcast game.
Hey, before you get onto that, I thought you always start this podcast with some fucking putting me on the back foot with some...
That was the sexist
found
man.
Some weird... Oh, that was the... Was it?
Yeah, that was it.
That was it. I got away quite lightly.
You did get away quite lightly. I mean, you've done some rubbish, but not that. You've mainly done quite good stuff.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I'm still doing some of it, let's face it.
Let's talk about your podcast, because it's good. It's and like it's very triggering for me. I'm going to tell you this straight away. Okay, it's called Froth.
Yeah,
And it's you and your wife and Barry Castanola, who's a great stand-up. Your wife is called Sian.
Yeah,
my first girlfriend was called Sian,
right?
And it's triggering for me to hear a Welsh woman called Sian talking, and I find it very difficult.
When you say triggering...
Yeah, because it makes me remember...
Do you mean you're going off in your trousers?
Well, almost, but not quite. Because it makes it just all the time I'm just thinking about my first... And I've got a thing for the Welsh accent, only from a woman, though, unfortunately.
Okay.
Or fortunately, whichever you're looking at. So for the main person, one of the main people in the podcast to be a Welsh woman called Sian, it keeps on taking me back into... My teenage years of...
Where does it take you to?
Well, it takes me to just the sexual frustration of going out with someone for 2 years and basically only occasionally kissing them.
How old were you?
I was 16 to 18.
16 to 18?
Yeah, so I did. I got nowhere near losing my virginity. I went out with her for 2 years. She was a little... So she was 14 when I started going out with her. So it's a, you know, it's a... Back in those days, that was all right. 16 and 14 was all right. But it was a very innocent relationship, maybe 19 and 17, maybe we got that far. But
when did you lose your virginity then?
When I was nearly 20. I was very late.
Really?
Yeah, and I'd had sex once. I mean, I would say half a time, and only because I got concerned and stopped it, not because, you know, I didn't come off.
What?
I didn't go
off
early.
You get concerned for her health?
I got concerned because we weren't using any contraception.
I thought you were concerned about your own fitness.
And so I was about 2 months off being 20. And then I didn't have sex again for another year. I had sex one time.
So by the time you were 21, your 21st birthday, you'd had sex
1.5... By my 21st birthday, I'd probably had sex about six times.
Oh, six times?
With two women.
Oh, fair play. I lost my virginity. I didn't know. I didn't have any sex education in school. Nor did you, probably, in the early 80s.
A little bit, but
about
nothing.
The same age. Yeah. Nothing. We had nothing in Wales. And so I can't remember what age we were.
Right.
And her parents were out and she lay down on the bed and all the lights were off.
Yeah.
And I sort of fumbled my way into the bathroom. I don't think I've ever told anybody this before.
Okay.
She'll know, but I fumbled my way into the bathroom,
yeah.
Put the light on and made the fatal error of unrolling the condom completely and then trying to put it on.
Yeah.
I got it on... literally 3/4 of an inch to an inch just on and then it was just hanging down. I sort of came back into the room and we tried to do it
right
and I tried to sort of stuff the condom in first. So is that half a time or is that a quarter? I don't think that even counts as half a time.
I don't know if it can. I mean, I don't even. I was thinking the other day, does my first time even count? I was technically
what
inside.
What happened? I'll tell you if it counts. I'll jot this down.
Technically in. So like, it was. I've been going out with this girl for about 3 or 4 days with someone we'd worked. We've been doing sketches.
Three or four days?
Yeah, we're students. We'd been in a sketch group together, but we'd sort of got together and we'd been to bed a couple of times, but not had the full deal, Rod. You know, that other things had gone on. And then she sort of climbed on top of me and pulled me into her. And
God, this sounds like a Millers and Boone novel. Pulled me into her. That's much more romantic than mine.
And then I was sort of, but then I was right because there was no contraception, but also nothing. You know, it was quite a, there wasn't much going on. You know, she was just sitting there and I was just sitting there. And then I felt like worried about it. So I was, once you're inside, does that count or do you have to?
What's that counts?
That counts.
What, are you thinking that only...
I don't know, you know, but it doesn't... Like, I was technically...
You're thinking
I was
you have to come out once and then go back in for it to count?
I'm counting it. I count it, but... But it's
I think you definitely count it. If you go in a club once, you don't have to, you've been in the club, you don't have to come back out and ask the bouncers to let you back in again. You go to space, you go into space, you don't have to come out and go back in.
But given I'd waited that long to my precious gift of my virginity, it was a literal anticlimax.
So did... I'm jotting this down. I'm jotting down some of the salient points. So she's sitting on top of you, doing nothing. You're lying on the bed, are you?
I'm lying down. I think she wanted to, you know, like sometimes women just want to be for things to go very slowly, like to the extent that nothing's happening at all. And you can do that for a bit, but on your first go, you know, you want to get a couple of pumps in there just to get get the ball inflated.
I was going to say the word pumps, but it's your podcast and you are in a position to do that. But so you both lay there.
Yeah. Well, she was sitting up.
Sitting up. How long did it carry on? Did it,
how long's my penis?
Did it carry on? No, how long? What happened? How long
basically
did it go on
for? I was in there and I was maybe in there for 10 seconds and then I said, you know, we shouldn't do this because I haven't got any contraception.
Right.
So I was a very responsible young man.
That is very difficult to see if that counts. I'd throw that out to
would
listeners.
You?
Yeah.
So then, if that's the case, I'm in my 20s, and I can't.
I think it does count. I've decided. Okay. I think it's a big tick there.
Okay. But anyway, so as I was listening to your podcast, I was just thinking about the sexual frustration.
Oh yes, I remember.
Met my girlfriend Sian when she came to live in London when we were in our early 20s, and we went out for one night and had a kiss that night. And that's your podcast has opened up all kinds of things. We snogged and then she was going out with someone else. And then I didn't see her again until I think her marriage. I went to her. Did I go to her? I don't think I went. I saw her at someone else's wedding like years
but
later.
Our wives are our friends, aren't they?
Our actual wives are friends, yeah.
Our actual wives are friends.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, well, she's not coming over to your house.
I've been out. With my wife and your wife.
What?
I think or did I just share a cab with them? I can't remember. But I've met.
Or was it just my wife?
It was just your wife. You were off on tour. She said, I'm called Sian. She had the accent. I said, all right, let's just go. You pretend to be the other Sian. And then I don't feel morally that this is wrong. She agreed. Yes, I've met your wife. She's lovely and she's very funny. She's very pretty. What's it like? Because me and my wife have done a few things together. Like she's been on my podcast and we've done a few things on Twitch together, messing around. Is that good for a relationship to be doing comedy together, doing a podcast together, or is it?
Well, on the whole, it's fine. Yeah. On the whole, it is fine. We're fine with it.
Yeah.
We're both slightly control freaky and you can kind of only have, like, because of the amount of work involved, not there's much prep, but there's a bit of prep and there's a bit of admin, there's a bit of working out, you know. And so one of you has to take a bit of the lead and then the person who takes a bit of the lead feels that it's kind of their thing.
Sure.
This is me I'm talking about, by the way, when I say one of you. But also, it's because it was kind of the genesis of it. It sort of evolved, I think, out of my radio show on Radio Wales, where I did that for 10 years before Sian came on as a co-host.
Yeah.
So I did it with other people for 10 years before she got involved. Sure. So I sort of feel that it's my thing, I guess. And then, of course, she's got strong opinions on it. And so that's where it can get a little bit tense. Yeah. But broadly,
I like that though. I like there's a little bit of tension in the podcast.
Bit of an edge.
And I like it. You're a proper. I mean, look, you get on. If the podcast is anything to go by, you get on very well. You've got a very good sense of humor together. And it's a very nice relationship. But because you've been together a good while, you're able to be honest with each other and honest when you're winding each other up. And it's good, but that's where it's going. I mean, it's Richard and Judy, isn't it? That's what Richard and Judy's all about.
Is it? I suppose we are the new Richard and Judy. I mean, God, I'd love to be the new Richard Madeley. I would, honestly.
Yeah.
You said earlier, what could be the...
the new Richard Madeley.
Rod what could Gilbert. Be on the plaque, honestly, the new Richard Madeley. Or even not even the new one, just one of them.
And so the podcast is, you take a couple of silly stories from the news and just chat about them and have some guests over
Run
Zoom.
With it. Yeah, and run with it. But what's nice about it is that we can actually follow the conversation. So we go, I don't know the answer to that. Who might know that? And then we'll just ring...
Yeah, that's really good. I love that.
People we know or people we don't know, and just follow the conversation till we get answers or don't get answers or whatever. Yeah, it's very... We did it completely trying to get away from the news cycle this year. Has been so fucking grim.
Yeah.
So we tried to do it, you know.
Did it come out of that, though? Was that the reason you started it? Because there was no live gigs, so you thought you'd do the podcast?
Well, I mean, I was on tour when this happened. I literally fled Ireland. I did my 110th, tour show in Belfast. And then I was off to Dublin and Galway and Limerick. And I was on my way to Dublin, the gig the next day. And my agent rang me. She said, turn around, get to the airport. Ireland's locking down. No gigs. So we literally sort of hightailed it to the airport, got out of there.
Yeah.
And got back to Britain where the mood was a little bit more relaxed, it has to be said. You know, we didn't lock down for a few more days. But so, lockdown's been very, very odd, up and down. I've had some really dark times. It's been really up and down, properly struggling at times.
Sure.
And some shit that's happened in my life. And the podcast really, what it was totally born out of that. It was totally just going, we want to come down here in this basement and just talk shit and forget everything else.
Yeah.
Just talk about Monster Munch or ferrets or fucking feet or whatever it is and just let yourself go, you know, and it has been nice for that.
Yeah. Well, it is fun because it's funny, these silly stories. Now, I was just listening to this week's one. I have listened to a couple of them, but I was just listening to the latest one. There's a couple of things. I've discovered that you have eczema in your ear. That's quite interesting. I don't think we would have found that out anywhere else. I wouldn't have found that out by Googling.
No, and I've never mentioned it before to anybody, I don't think, not even to Sian.
I think Sian was surprised,
She was surprised, yeah. It just came up in a story. That guy, it was Sadiq Khan's deputy this week, was on a Zoom meeting, and at one point he got caught with, he took his glasses off and he had the arm of his glasses in his ear like that, going, on a Zoom meeting with Sadiq Khan and stuff. And then he took it out and ate it.
I mean, that is a... there's many parts of the body I think are edible, and there's many things that come out of the body you can have a little crack at, but earwax is the... I mean, I remember even as a kid, you know, you try everything when you're a kid, right?
Yeah, earwax is straightforward, I think.
But you try earwax and you go, okay, I don't need to try that one again.
We all know. We all know it's bitter.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how we know that, but earwax is really simple. A quick sniff when you... Definitely... 100%. If you say you know, you're lying.
Yeah.
Taste it. No, I don't think you do. I don't think most people do.
No.
So he was gouging it out with his ears, with his glasses, literally gouged it out, and then spooning it into his mouth on a Zoom meeting with Sadiq Khan and other dignitaries. And he said that he had eczema of his ear canal, and I went, I saw that. That's what I've got. That is, and I've had that for 40 years. I've had treatment for it. That's exactly what I've got. It is painful.
Yeah.
Having said that, you don't need to spoon it out with your glasses and eat it.
I mean, I think it'd make you even less likely to eat it, wouldn't it? If it's got eczema, it's not just the earwax; it's sort of earwax with eczema.
That's interesting, actually.
Do you think that makes it? Maybe that makes it tastier.
That is interesting. It's got flaky skin in the wax.
Yeah,
it's almost like a sort of nougat effect. I don't know. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Is it more or less appetizing with eczema? Ear canal skin.
I mean, you're the man to find out. We could find that live. On...
Oh, I could do this live. I haven't got. I've only got it in one ear, so I could literally have a control ear.
Yeah.
Well, I just eat the wax, and then the other one I can eat with flakes of eczema skin in it. And then I can feed back to everybody.
Blind taste test.
I imagine your listeners, as people listening, going, boo, boo, boo. It's going to be like that Paddy McGuinness show with people just switching off. Boo.
I know. Well, I did. I actually, when you started bringing it up on your podcast, I had to turn your podcast off. But then I just I listened to the rest of it on the dog walk. But it was like, this is too much. The thing about Well, again, this is Sian as well, but Judy, was it Judy Dench? Or someone, it was an actress who had...
Judy Dench. Yeah,
Judy Dench had given a kiss of life to a fish. And then Sian claimed she'd given a kiss of life to a fish.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, lying. She hasn't.
I think they're both lying.
Sian often lies. She lies.
Well, I think Judy Dench is lying as well. Because surely...
Why would Judy Dench lie? Sian, I get it.
But why? But you can't give a kiss of life to a fish because a fish has gills. You can't. It doesn't ingest oxygen in the same way. So you can't blow into it and give it air. That's killing
I'm more
it, isn't
inclined.
It? Air I don't kills, know. Air kills a fish.
You need to does it? Back
in, yeah, it swims in water. If you take a fish out of water, it dies. That's why, because it's not in water. You can't blow into its mouth. That's just like just pouring water into your mouth in a torrent. It's like putting a hose pipe in your mouth. Going, that'll make you better, Rod. What's wrong with him? Why
we're,
back, getting better?
We're on to Taskmaster already. See, if I was on the podcast now, we'd have this conversation. I'd go, I don't know, actually. Let's ring somebody. We'd either ring a fish expert, or we would ring a comedian who we happen to know who had a goldfish or something like that. Yeah. And that's where we'd go. I get Judy Dench lie. I mean, Judy Dench wouldn't lie about it. Yeah. She wouldn't lie.
But you think your wife...
Sian, fuck. Sian's got nothing else. So all she's got is a fantasy life of... blowing into goldfish and eating chow mein out of her dad's pocket. That was the week before. Do you hear that one?
I did hear that one. That was great as
fucking lie as well. In a hotel room, she said she had a full beef chow mein out of her father's pocket. No, she didn't. And I have to pick her up on this. I'm sorry.
Well, it's very good. It's very entertaining. Do all listen to it. Did you see the... I mean, you're not on Twitter. This week, there's a confession site, and I've just forgotten what it's called. It's run by Rob Manuel. He does a few things, and it was, and people can Anon Confessions or something it's called, but I can't remember the name of it. But a manager says I got a great deal for my comedian client to do his own podcast, and got him a fantastic deal. And every week, I tell him he's done a great job, and I've never listened to a single episode. Do you think I know it's not me because my management have never done anything with my podcast, and I've never had a great deal in any podcasts. Do you think it could be you, Rod? I'm trying to work out who it is. Do you think it could be you? Did you get a great deal? Does every week your manager go, great show today?
I haven't told this to anybody else.
Yeah.
But we're still operating on a loss.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. Because we pay Barry Castagnola a proper wage to produce it.
Good. Right.
And then nobody else gets any money. So I don't get any money. Okay. Sian doesn't get any money. And my agent gets 15% of fuck all. Her words.
I think you're safe then. All right.
That's the way it should be.
That's the two of us out of that. So that's good to hear. So look, you'd just come back to stand-up after like 8 years off stand-up or something like that, wasn't it? You hadn't done a stand-up show for 8 years.
I think about 7 years. Yeah, a very long break. I didn't think I'd do it again. Yeah.
So what brought you back to it, and how annoying? And are you going to be able to carry on the tour, or are you still? I mean, I know you've got dates in February or something, but that's not.
No, I haven't. I put a couple of socially distanced dates in March.
Right.
Basically, I had about 36 left to go.
Right.
And then I was filming the show and stuff. That all got cancelled. So we've just bumped it, kept bumping it from March to July, July to September, September to January to March. At the moment, I've got a couple in March, socially distanced, and the rest are in July and then the autumn.
Oh, okay. Well, that should be.
Who knows? I'll keep bumping them. If not, people have been very kind. Most people have kept their tickets, you know. But I also appreciate there's a massive recession coming, and I'm expecting the boo, 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 I'm expecting the tickets to start being refunded any second, which is utterly fair enough.
Sure. Is that... I mean, was it great? Was it good to come back to stand-up after that length of time? And is that frustrating to have been stopped, or is it...
I've got a very love-hate relationship with stand-up.
Sure.
Where I know so many stand-ups who have to be on stage. They love it. They miss it. They get withdrawal symptoms if they don't go on stage every few days or whatever. I'm not remotely like... I get such performance anxiety. I'm so fucking stressed by the whole idea of it. I'm bouncing off the walls. I'm a mess.
Right.
So in 7 years, I didn't do a gig. I did not miss it for one day.
Right.
Not at all. I just one or two circumstances happened in my life, and I found myself suddenly writing a show again. Writing for the first time in 7 years and back on stage and with my same love-hate relationship. I love doing it and it's got the buzz, but the nerves and the stress, the strain on me is so immense that if I don't do it, I'm not worried. Do you know what I mean?
That's a surprise. I mean, I used to get nervous, but I get like heightened. I get, you know, there's adrenaline, But I don't any unless I'm doing something that I've really not done before. I mean, I guess you're doing really big gigs, but was it the same as small gigs as well, or is it?
It don't make any difference. No. The size of the gig is neither here nor there. I get the same nerves when I'm doing the preview gigs in a room of 50 people, in the lots of many lovely pub gigs around the country where you can go and try out stuff. I get exactly the same feeling there,
as I
do in the bigger ones. You know, exactly identical. Right. You know, and I'm outside pacing the streets,
right?
You know, pacing, just bouncing off the walls, basically. You know, So I sort of love it, and yeah, I love hate, love hate.
And because obviously you're touring on your own, I mean, with your team, I guess, of tour managers and whatever behind you, but you're
It's one tour manager,
one tour manager. So it's you and your tour manager, which is basically what I tour with as well now. Do you find that different? And you know, obviously, when you start doing the clubs, You're mixing with lots of different comedians, but is that part of it, that you're just the loneliness of it? Is that weird, or do you kind of
I'm very shy and I'm quite solitary anyway and stuff. So I'm absolutely fine on my own or with me and just Simon Mason, my tour manager from the Comedy Store. You'll probably know. But I equally do miss the circuit. I do miss. The cut and thrust of the circuit. I do miss going on with other people, the sort of crack backstage and stuff. And just watching other people, you know. I miss that buzz of that somebody else has gone on and they've fucking died on their ass. And now you've got to go out and try it. Or you've died on your ass and then watching them do really well. All of that is interesting and fun and exciting. It's a real landscape, isn't it? It's an exciting place to work and stuff. When you're on tour, it's perhaps not quite as exciting a place to work because it's just you and your routines.
Sure.
And I have got my routines, man. This is when I sound check. This is when I shower. This is when I go through my stuff. This is when I get on the exercise bike. This is when I eat. It's like that, you know, whereas when you're backstage in a smaller comedy club or whatever with other people, you can't do any of that because everybody's just fucking talking and eating your sandwiches and banging on about how well they did or how shit the crowd is. You know, it's much more.
I don't. When you started, I was more. You started about 2002, and I came back to stand up about 2004. I don't remember us crossing over all that much on stage because it's weird. Some people like Russell Howard, who I was on his TV show the other day. I used to be on with him all the time. You know, just like coincidentally, it would just do a gig and Russell Howard. I know he did a lot of comparing and stuff, so you often got him comparing. But did we ever gig together at all?
I never compared really, so maybe it's that. No, I don't think. I mean, I'm flattered you don't remember. I don't think we did.
It's sort of weird that with comedy. Some people you really cross over with all the time and see all the time.
Yeah.
And then other people you go, oh, yeah, you know, I've never been
maybe
on.
Maybe it's because we were both, I don't know, maybe we were both headliners, so maybe that's why we...
I think we're both, I was going to say at the start of this, we're both very pedantic people who grab hold of an idea and won't let it go and are argumentative. Yeah. So this could be an interesting podcast, but so far we've got...
forensically rinsed the shit out of an idea. maybe it's that. No, I don't know. No, I don't think we did. I shared a taxi with you once. I said this to you before the podcast started. But I think that's the only time we met.
When was that? Because I don't remember that even, Rod.
I don't think I'd even started doing comedy. I think it was around about the year 2000. I was in Clapham.
Oh, yeah.
And you came out of a shop. And I was with somebody. I was doing market research at the time.
Okay.
And the girl I was with, that's fucking Richard Herring. I was like, whoa, what's fucking Richard Herring like that? And you came out. You had 400 condoms and a bounty. You came out and you got in a black cab.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, I got no idea how this happened.
Yeah.
But we ended up in there with you. I got no idea how this happened.
Wow.
It wasn't me kind of going, you know, it wasn't me being... so obsequious and fandomish. Yeah. It wasn't that. I don't know what it was.
Right.
Maybe you invited us in.
Maybe I did. You know, I'm in show business. See a couple of young.
I've got
people.
400 condoms here and a bounty. It's my party.
I don't remember. I do remember once having. I remember once sharing a cab with some people in Clapham just because there was a big queue and I heard they were going to South London. I said, "Oh, should we share?" And it was some Americans that said, "Oh yeah, that never happens here." And so I shared, and then they were going to slightly different place, and I ended up paying for much more than it was a much longer.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, I get the whole imposter syndrome thing. Got that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think I'm sort of more or less over it. But yeah, I think we're similar. I don't think I'm quite as shy as you. It's not quite as crippling for me, but I was always pretty shy. I wasn't very good at socializing really most of my life. You know, I had to know people really. And I was really, you know, feeling like am I good enough to be doing this, especially with stand up and stuff. I found that really difficult to enter that world. Without feeling like, and I think probably correctly the first time I did it because I was 22 and didn't have a fucking clue about
it. That's amazing. I am amazed by people who can do this. I mean, I started at 33. That was my first, apart from one school play that they forced me to do to try and bring me out of my shell.
Yeah.
33 was the first ever time. I can't imagine how you got on stage and how you had the confidence to
well,
do
it's a
it.
Mixture,
I mean, I'm sure that's a false thing in my head. But.
Well, it's a mixture of like, I can't work it out because I know how insecure I was and how scared I was. So it's a mixture of like massive overconfidence, but also, I don't know, it must be a separate thing for you. If you're as shy as you are, as you've sort of discussed in, you know, other shows and other TV shows and things, the idea of going on stage to someone who's shy, you'd think that's insane, but it's such a different thing that I was you know, the idea of going to a party and talking to a stranger was absolutely terrifying to me, and I'd go to parties and I'd basically run away unless I was really drunk. But the idea
that's what I did. I ran away. I mean, if Sharma's, you know, she the night we met, this is only 12 years ago. The night we met in a nightclub, a shitty night. Oops, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I can't edit it.
Sorry, you're allowed to swear.
They had a shitty. No, I know they're swearing. It's the nightclub I'm worried about.
Okay.
Shitty carpet in this wonderful nightclub. Wonderful. And we met in there. And where, incidentally, that's where I met my previous girlfriend 10 years earlier as well. I don't think I've been out with anybody that I didn't meet in that shitty nightclub.
Okay, that's nice.
For the last 30 years. Anyway, but I met Shannon there, and she was, this sounds awful, she was following me around, but not I'm not going around, she was following me around. But I was running away. I was getting on really well with her, and we'd chat, and then I'd go, right, got to go, and I would run over there and stand on my own, like, and she'd follow me. And in the end of the night, there was only two people left in that nightclub, her wondering where I was, and me locked in the toilet until... I'm 37 at this point,
right?
Roughly,
yeah.
And I was thrown out because I was hiding in the toilet from this girl I was getting on quite well with. That's shy.
I think you're more shy than I am, but it still would, you know, for that person to then make that, and for me as well, you know, I think like as a kid, you sort of like don't. I look back and go, how dare I come to London at 22 and think I could entertain even like a 25. How dare I go to...
So how did you do it? So how did you do it?
I mean, I was bad. We just we bowled it on and went through it, you know, and I did it. I had loads of bad gigs. I had some good gigs, but I just really, really wanted to be a comedian. You know, I really wanted to be in comedy, but...
But why? Was it people around you that you got taken along with?
I think I took everyone along with me. I was so ambitious to be a comedian. I think I took quite a lot of the people who are successful comedians now from my group of people at university. I sort of led the way. You know, I go, we've got to go to London, we've got to write for the radio. I wasn't that keen on doing stand-up, but I did it. I just think that's I wanted incredible. It so much that I was prepared to put up with. I mean, I had loads of terrible gigs and not that many good ones. I think at university I'd done lots of acting, I'd done lots of comedy, and it had gone really well. So I had all that to keep me going, you know, but the idea, you know, a 30-year-old would be paying to see me, you know, paying actual money to see me, a stranger, trying to entertain them. I can't get my head around that, and especially knowing how, like, inside I just had no confidence about my abilities, you know. So it's so strange, but I guess it's a different thing. And like I've said this in some of my shows, you know, that as long as everyone's sitting in rows looking at me, I'm fine with it. But if I was down amongst them, I'd find it really difficult to interact with people. You know, I'm better now than I was, but I'd find it really difficult.
Yeah, yeah. I suffer with it terribly. I mentioned this on a TV show once years ago, but I had this girlfriend who persuaded me to do comedy for years. She went, you should do this, you should try something. I was like, fucking, are you mad? You see, I can't even go in a coffee shop on my own. I can't even go in a restaurant on my own. I can't even talk to anybody. You think I'm going to get on stage? You're fucking insane. And she kept on about it. And in the end, I'm like, all right, I'll give it a go. I ended up giving it a go, 33 years old. And quite enjoyed it, did quite enjoy it. And didn't feel as shy as I do out in the audience kind of thing, like you said. But I can remember the one imposter syndrome thing that stands out to me was that I used to work at the Amused Moose Comedy Club in London, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, I can't just go and be a stand-up. So I'll go to a comedy club. First comedy club I went to ever in my life, 27 years old. First time I'd ever seen any comedy, Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
And then I went to work 5 years later in the Amused Moose, like putting out the chairs, you know, like working in a comedy club. You know, you got the Amused Moose T-shirt on. You know, you're putting out the chairs, you welcome the comedians. It's volunteer work. You're doing the lights, you're doing the sound desk and all that. And one night they had Eddie, you know, they get big names sometimes trying out new material. All of these clubs do, don't they? The small ones, you know, you'll have been there. And Eddie Izzard came in. And I was like, oh my God, you know, Eddie Izzard, I saw you 5 years ago. You're the only comedian I've ever seen, really. You know, like I was a blown... Anyway, so I did the lights and did the thing. And he did his gig. And then about a year later, I started doing comedy. And then about 2 years, 3 years after that, somebody said, my agent rang me and she said, do you want to, I've been doing comedy about 3 years. And she said, do you want to do a gig with you, Ross Noble and Eddie Izzard in a festival? It's just you three. And I was like, the fuck are you talking about? Me, Ross Noble and Eddie Izzard? I was like, no, of course I don't. She was like, this is like a lot of money, you know, for somebody who's been doing stand-up for 3 years. There's more money than I earned that year.
Sure.
It's like, I'm absolutely not doing a gig with him. I'll hold his coat for him again. I'll do the fucking sound and the lights. And I'll put the chairs out. But absolutely, and I turned it down, you know. And I would turn it down today if I got offered that. I wouldn't do that gig now. I'm not, you know, it's that thing of going, I know where I'm at. And I know my place, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think people just assume, and some of the comedians I think are, I mean, some of it is bluster and some of it is covering up insecurities, but obviously there's a confidence to being a comedian. So I don't know if I know anyone who's quite as wallflower as you are that you're describing here.
No, in some ways, in some ways, weirdly confident in some ways, and you can walk out on stage, you can play to have many people, whatever, do that. But equally, you know, and I've said this on Would I Lie to You, although they didn't cover the shyness part because that's a bit dark and grim and not very funny. Yeah. But I said that I slept outside a hotel in Spain for a month because I was too shy to check in, and they kept all the stuff about the hotel and all this kind of stuff, but they cut the bit where I said I was too shy because they were like, yeah, that's not Friday night half past eight, is it?
But I used to be, and I still am to an extent, like I was scared I wouldn't go into shops if I was like abroad and I was, you know, on my own, and which I sometimes went on a holiday on my own, and like I was too nervous to go into any restaurants in case they didn't understand how it worked, you know. So I'd just not eat anything, or I'd just find, you know, I'd find a sandwich somewhere and somehow get it. But I would be so, you know, you wouldn't even try things out because I was scared.
I go home. If I went Christmas shopping now.
Yeah.
So if I went Christmas shopping tomorrow, I would leave the house and I would come home in the night with my blood sugar on the floor because I can't go in somewhere and eat. So I will try. I will try and go in a coffee shop. I'll try and go in the chip shop. I will stand outside a restaurant. I will go, come on, you can go in there. Just go in there. Look, there's two people in there on their own. Come on. Can't do it.
It's interesting. I mean,
5 hours later, I go home with no food and no drink, just fucking on my knees.
It's similar. I think we've got a similar approach to stand up in some ways. And certainly the way you pick on us. I mean, I was watching a lot of your stuff again today, and you're just great at finding the absurdity in something quite small. Obviously, the famous example of you having the suitcase handle and taking that idea as far as it will go. But it's that thing. But we're both, your parents were both teachers. My parents were both teachers. It's sort of interesting. There's a lot of sort of similarities. I did hear you on Stuart Goldsmith's podcast in 2012, and you'd just been doing work experience, and you were saying you were considering giving up comedy and becoming a primary school teacher.
I did give up comedy pretty much. Yeah. I didn't do another gig after that for 7 years. But I just didn't do the primary school teaching. No, I mean, my parents were both teachers, but everyone in my family is teachers.
My
brother's a teacher. I'm the only one who's not.
Yeah, me too.
And I've seen what it's done to them.
Yeah.
And it is brutal.
Yeah.
I think there's not the respect. There's not the resources. Not the support. There's not the money. There's not the anything to be a teacher. You've just got to want to do it and love it, and then just take the shit. and focus on the reward that the kids can give you and you can get from yourself. But I wouldn't be a teacher.
No, I wouldn't be a teacher.
I would still entertain the idea. You know, some of these things I do in my work experience series. I've done 33 episodes now.
Yeah,
which BBC Wales is showing every week. Every week. This is how bad lockdown. Lockdown. They got no content every Friday for 6 months. 6 months on a Friday night is Rod Gilbert's work experience on BBC Wales. It's like fucking Dallas. Going 6 months of every Friday, 33 episodes, 9 series. They repeat every Friday.
That's good.
Literally overexposure. No, there's an overexposure.
So honestly, the one of those that I haven't seen that I was most interested in was you were an RAF pilot in one of your work. How far did you get as an RAF pilot in? What did you do? Three or four days on the job? Is it something like that?
I always get 3 to 5 days,
right,
in total to film the whole thing.
Okay.
So I've got a training is usually, so teacher, one day's training, off you go.
Yeah.
RAF fighter pilot in the same plane as the Red Arrows use.
Right.
2 days training, have a goal. And I was flying this, I get very airsick as well. Have you ever been in a fighter jet?
It's not like EasyJet or
Ryanair, it's not like that. The G-force is insane. But because of the budget of BBC Wales, like if it was Clarkson doing it and Hammond and those fuckers, they'd be in one of those, they'd be training in them, wouldn't they? Building up their resistance and working it all out. BBC Wales, literally half an hour in a classroom, getting a fighter jet. So I got in this thing and they threw it around with me in there. I mean, here's some little known, under the thing of TV, I was sick 8 times before they made me take the controls.
Okay.
So they said they've got this system. So you've got the guy in front of you and you're in the back, you know, and you've got controls and he's got controls. And he said, you know, he's basically like, okay, you've got control, you know, and you're like Maverick and Goose or whatever. You're like, okay, I got control. I had 3 sick bags with 8 sicks in my right hand while I was driving it. Yeah, and the other thing is that the MOD wouldn't let us put GoPros on the what's the ejector seat, right. The lid.
Yeah,
that lid is like £1 million, and it shoots up in the air. So we had GoPros on it attached to his camera. They were like, "You can't fucking do that." In the end, I was holding a camera like this and driving the plane and with 3 zip bags with 8 zigs in trying to do this thing. Oh my god, hilarious! Absolutely
amazing, though.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done some, but the idea of it isn't really to do like toughest jobs or amazing things. It's just, you know, we started off with Bin Man. It's just celebrating people,
yeah,
and the stuff they do, you know, and finding the joy and the fun in the stuff we all do, even if it's the shit, most boring shit, boring stuff. It's finding where the fun is and where the challenge is and where the interest is for people. Yeah.
Terrific. Well, I'm going to ask you some Christmas emergency questions because it's Christmas. Here's Carry Christmas emergency questions. Oh, it's see-through. I won't ask you that one.
Why not?
Because it's there's no answer. This is a stupid. I'll ask you then.
No answer.
Well, you're not going to be able to answer it. It's a joke question. What is your favourite Croatian Christmas carol? If you can't think of one, just make one up and sing it now, and then everyone else can judge who is the biggest racist.
No, I did on Taskmaster. I did an Eastern European song about a little match girl and a toothless goon who shot her shitting face off at the end of the song, and I didn't go down very well. So after a few glasses of wine, I probably shouldn't be making up Christmas carols about Croatians.
All right.
I mean, I'm happy to.
Okay, I'll ask you this one: do you think they have Christmas in America?
I'm a bit confused about it. I had this conversation with my wife this week.
Yeah.
You know Sean?
I do know Sean, yeah.
I don't want
to... It brings that every time you say
Steady.
A name.
So you're... You know...
As long as you haven't got a speaking there, it's okay. I can cope. As long
is
as
it holiday? Is it holiday or is it Christmas? Because we've seen a couple of Christmassy things this week.
Yeah.
And, you know... I don't normally go in for Christmassy stuff, but this year has been so shit.
Yeah.
That I've been embracing Christmas since late August.
Yes.
and I've heard people talk about Christmas, and I didn't think they talked about Christmas. I thought it was holiday.
Well, that's true. Also, because they do Thanksgiving like at the end of November.
What's
don't
that
they?
Then? What's that's all that?
They
then?
Have a turkey at the end of November already, don't they? So why they can't have another? They can't go for another turkey.
So what's holiday then?
Well, it's Christmas. They call it holidays because they don't want to be offensive to people who aren't Christians, I suppose.
But is that what it is?
Happy Human Holiday. I've got it written on here. This is Rick and Morty.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is? Is that what holidays is? Is it like a lay kind of secular...
Know, I don't even know if they have Christmas in America.
No, I can tell that you've started confidently and now you don't know, do you?
I don't know. That's why I asked
Do
the
they
question.
Have Christmas... I think they do have Christmas in America, but... I mean, yeah, I think they do.
Okay.
What's the answer?
Don't know. I haven't looked it up.
What?
Do you think that having sex with the Holy Ghost is cheating? Do you know what the Holy Ghost is, Rod? Are you a religious man?
I am not a religious man.
No.
Church, I fucking hated church.
Yeah,
I mean,
is that
bad to say that?
No, I did. I was made to go to church and I hated it. That's
I was made to go to church. Church was like... Church was like, this is how I looked at the weekend when I was a child. I thought, Saturday, all right, Saturday, tis was, swap shop,
yeah,
game,
yeah.
Bloody gladiators, wrestling on a Saturday afternoon, your grandmother getting dressed up, putting her best clothes on, coming downstairs to watch the wrestling, Mick McManus,
yeah.
Cat Weasel, Big Daddy.
Yeah.
I was going to say Sugar Puffs then, not Sugar Puffs, Giant Haystacks.
Giant Haystacks.
Not
Kendo
Sugar Puffs.
Nagasaki.
Kendo Nagasaki. And then Sunday was like the fucking punishment for having enjoyed Saturday, wasn't it? Sunday was like, I mean, I dreaded Sunday to the point where I would have foregone Saturday.
Right.
And Friday night. I would have given up Friday night, which was, we had sausage and chips on Friday night. We went swimming. That was a treat. And then Saturday was kids' day, your day, your special day, like a small Christmas every week.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have given it all up to fuck Sunday off. Discuss.
Did you have to go to church every week?
Every.
Did you?
I mean, not every week. My dad didn't give a shit, thankfully.
Right.
My dad died the other day, and I did the wake a week or two ago. But he was a committed, not an atheist, an agnostic kind of thing. So he didn't give a shit. So he stayed at home. But my mother expected us to go to church, and I hated every second of that tedious shit. Tedious shit. Nothing untoward happened to me, I have to say. Like, as happened. But it was tedious shit.
Yeah. And getting dressed up. Do you have to put a little tie on?
No, Christ, no. No. My dad wouldn't. I don't think my dad would have let that happen. He was happy for us to, like, it was a compromise, you know. My mum took us to church, but my dad wouldn't have allowed that. I don't think. My dad. This is my parents were married for 58 years, and my mum died on their 58th wedding anniversary of Alzheimer's, and recently, just before my dad passed away the other day, he's not religious at all. And then he said, "I'm looking forward to seeing your mother again," and I was like, what? And I know you're grieving, but you know, he's, what are you talking about? You're not a religious person. And then he went in oblivion. Okay, now. But that was his attitude. In oblivion, yeah. was his attitude. Yeah, she doesn't exist. That's what he said about my mother after she had 58 years of marriage on their anniversary. She doesn't exist. So he passed away the other day, and I respect his wishes to not exist now.
Sure.
So no, I didn't get dressed up for.
So is sex with the Holy Ghost cheating? Was my question.
I don't know why we've gone on.
Is it cheating? Right. If the Holy Ghost came in now and said, "I know you're married, Rod, but I'd like a shag," would you have sex with the Holy Ghost?
Do you mean? Is sex with the Holy Ghost cheating? Do you mean is it cheating on my partner?
Yes,
is it being unfaithful? That's what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. Would it be count as being unfaithful, or is it?
I thought you meant is it cheating sexually, like in some way?
No, I wouldn't ever like, mean something like that.
I was sort of robbing the idea of sex. Would I shag the Holy Ghost? Well, the thing is, what form is the Holy Ghost taking? Because
there's a lot of questions immediately.
What form is it taking?
Yeah. Is it a dove usually? Is it a dove, the Holy Ghost, sometimes?
So a dove walks in, claiming to be the Holy Ghost. See, we're already into difficulty. So the dove walks in, right? My first thought is, hello?
Yeah.
Here's a pigeon. Oh, no, it's a dove. And then he claims to be, I say they claim to be the Holy Ghost.
Yeah.
And then what do they do? Do they sort of bend over provocatively and point to the back of their wing? Is that what they do? They sort of.
This is all your projection. This is your.
Oh, it's all me. Is it? Okay,
this
fine.
Is you
right,
projecting
okay.
this.
So the Holy Ghost walks in as a dove.
Yeah.
The dove says, "Hi, Rod." I was like, "How do you know my name?" He says, "I'm the Holy Ghost." I don't know if I believe in the Holy Ghost enough to believe the dove.
Yeah. It's not clear what it is.
That's not a no.
But I think if your wife found out, you could say it was the Holy Ghost, so I had to.
If my wife came in, right, and I was, let's assume, I don't think we'd, what, am I upstairs or am I in the hall? So I'm on top of the Holy Holy Ghost. The dove is on top of me. What is he?
I think you'd be the postman in the dove. It's a cloaca that a dove has, but
okay.
I don't know what the Holy Ghost has.
Oh, a cloaca, yeah, it is good use. Yeah, okay. So we're in the hall. Let's assume it's missionary. The dove is on the floor, and I am on top of the dove.
Yeah.
My wife walks in and says, "Hello, hello, hello, hello. What's going on here?" And I turn around and I say, Do I say it's only the Holy Ghost?
Yeah, say it's the Holy Ghost, and I have to do
it. It's not how it looks. She's the Holy Ghost.
I'm not even sure the Holy Ghost is in the form of a dove. I might have made that up.
Well, I mean, I think whatever form it's in is material here. I think if my wife came in and found me fucking a dove, I don't think I'd even need the Holy Ghost excuse. I think she'd be fine with it.
It's good to know. You know, the only thing you can't be forgiven about is blaspheming against the Holy Ghost. That's it.
Is it?
That's the unforgivable sin.
Does what we've just done count?
I think whatever else we do in our lives, we are doomed.
I think what you've done there is taken me by the hand, led me innocently past past Sex with a Dove into the only inadmissible so I'm literally going to hell.
You're going to hell, there's no way
a
out.
A man in a Christmas jumper and a comedy moustache.
There's no way
led
out.
Led me into Sex with a Dove.
All right.
Very Christmassy, that, you're right.
I'm going to... the good news about Christmas is, and I went on about it a lot in this book today, is that they found the Do you watch The Muppet Christmas Carol? Are you a fan of The Muppet Christmas Carol?
Do I watch it?
Yeah, do you watch it?
Have I ever seen it?
Yeah. I mean, we watch it every year in our house.
Oh, do you?
But, you know, no, and I don't. It's not anything to do with having kids. We always have. Every year.
Is it one of your traditions?
Yeah, it's a very good film. But they cut out a big song at the middle of it, and it's going to be reinstated. That's the big news. That's the big Christmas news.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the...
I won't ask you about that.
No, ask me. I don't mind.
I don't mind. I'm not going to ask you about it. I'll just let people know. All right, here we go. Don't you think... Do you know the film Scrooge with Bill Murray? Have you watched that one?
Yeah. I'm just going to tell you very quickly that I suffer from ADD. So A, I've got terrible memory, and B, I've got terrible concentration. But yes, I have seen that film.
Okay.
So sometimes when you ask me things,
sometimes
I will appear to be absolutely batshit. Sometimes I am absolutely
okay,
batshit.
Okay, that's fine.
But I've got medical excuses.
Okay, that's good.
Things and prescriptions to prove it. So
that can help if you have sex with the Holy Ghost as well.
Yeah, I have seen Scrooge, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think Scrooge would be a better film if Bill Murray learned nothing from the ghosts and stayed just how he was at the start?
Well,
I think it'd be better.
I don't think it'd be a better film.
I think it would.
Because viewers need progression, they need characters to learn, they need an arc, don't they?
They don't.
But in terms of, if you're saying, would you prefer Bill Murray not to have learned anything, out of some spite or or entertainment value?
I just think...
But all films will be better in that sense.
No, I think Scrooge...
No arc and nobody learned anything.
I think Scrooge...
It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life. The best Christmas film of all time.
Yeah.
Wonderful arc. He realises, he wishes he was dead. He jumps off the bridge. He gets rescued. He says, and then suddenly he's got shown the wonderful life that he's had, and he realises if there was no arc and he got rescued and then just all of it done there was just fucking downhill.
I'd prefer that. But I think
that says more about you than Hollywood.
No, not only Scrooge, but also Groundhog Day. But at the beginning of those films, Bill Murray is a more likeable and relatable character than he is at the end of those films. And I think it'd be better. Wouldn't Scrooge be a great thing if Scrooge went, I've been visited by loads of fucking ghosts. Fuck the love you. I'm carrying on. Charles Dickens didn't give his money away, did he, the cunt? He lived in a big house in Bloomsbury.
Why are we starting with Scrooge? Why aren't you starting with Dickens and all that?
Because Scrooge is the character, isn't it? But also, I think in Groundhog Day, wouldn't it be brilliant if Bill Murray just was the same arsehole he was at the beginning, at the end, and just went, I've learned nothing.
But I think that's true. That's true of all films.
No,
all films.
It's true of all Bill Murray.
Every film. No, all films. Name me a film that is better because of the arc, the character.
Well, sometimes people are horrible and then they change into something nice. But
I know, but we're all much more entertained by the prick, aren't we? By the horrible one.
Bill Murray is likable at the beginning of those films and a horrible doofus at the end of those films.
I would argue that goes for almost every film. Get rid of the arc, get rid of the character learning something and improving and realising something about their life. And get rid of all of that and just have for every film should just go from shit to bad to worst to fucked credits. Every
good.
Film.
Good. All right. We'll do
especially
one more.
Kids films.
All right, here's a good one. What's the worst thing that's been drunkenly shouted at you by a friend or relative on Christmas Day? Or you could have shouted at someone else. Do you get angry on Christmas? You must get angry on Christmas Day. You must be furious on Christmas Day.
I once, Clint Edwards once. You know Clint Edwards?
No.
You know Clint Edwards, the comedian?
I don't think I do.
Don't you?
I don't think I do.
6'5".
Okay.
Hunched, but 6'5" on paper.
Okay.
Beautiful man.
Okay.
Stunningly handsome. Well-read, widely referenced, intelligent, wonderful human being. But he once made me 7 espresso martinis over Christmas. which I drank because I'm an idiot. And then, and this is one of the only times I've got angry over the Christmas period. He made me these espresso martinis. We always go, Christmas and New Year, we always go to down the Gower.
Okay.
Down to, we all have a little flat each, and then we meet up, we have fireworks on New Year's Eve, we do things over Christmas. And he made me these espresso martinis. He didn't just make them for me, he was making them for everyone, but I don't think anybody else drank seven espresso martinis, especially, you know what it's like at our age.
Yeah.
You don't mess with it.
No.
The system isn't built, Richard, is it, for seven?
Well, not even seven coffees or seven martinis, so no, to put them together, no, that's...
The system now is just about capable of half a mug of Mellow Birds. Half a mug of chicory, warm chicory. That's what we're built for now. Seven espresso martinis.
Sure.
And then the next day, we sort of partied all night on that, and then the next day... Everybody went to a restaurant. We walked over the cliff path in the Gower, beautiful beaches, past all these beautiful coves, and went to this restaurant. And then, everybody else ate, my wife and Clint and everyone else. Barry Castagnola was there. I think Greg might have been there. I don't. And then we all ate. And then I didn't eat. I wasn't feeling quite well enough. And then we left. I had a glass of water, if I remember. And then we left the restaurant, and I had a mile to get home. And it was at that point that the espresso martinis hit me. Roughly 20 minutes, pitch dark run across the cliff path. And I said, I'm not going to make the toilet. And I set off a pace ahead of everyone else with my phone as a torch. 20 minutes across the cliff path back to this flat. Just about made it, got through the door, got the key in the door, got in the bathroom, put the toilet seat down. And then... shat myself everywhere into my, just filled my trousers both sides like a piping bag. And then, this is one of the few times I got angry over Christmas, and then had to stand there until everyone else got back. And then I heard my wife, Charlotte, and them come in the front door, and the front door was immediately by the toilet. So I had to sort of call out and ask her to pass through some bin bags, just black bin bags, which I then had to stand in and get changed, get all my clothes like a magician, like one of those things you had in the beach in the 70s. You know, one of those things your mother got changed in at the beach. I get changed everything into this bin bag. And then I handed the bin bag out to Sean to dispose of. And I spent an hour cleaning up the bag. And then I handed her my hat. It had gone up my hat for some reason. Or just my bobble hat. It was up the back. Like, you know, like a baby's... You know, I haven't got kids, but I've heard people say, well, it went right up their back, out the back of the nappy. This was like that, but a grown man up through his trousers, up underneath the fleece and the T-shirt and on the back of my hat. So I passed her that out, and this is true love. Remember those stickers you had on your things as a kid? True love is rinsing out your husband's hat in a sink over Christmas because there's shit up the back of it. That's true love. That is true love. And and I was really angry with Clint Edwards, and that I think is the only time I've been angry with that, because I was like, why the fuck did you make seven espresso martinis? Who has seven espresso? It's not like he's in his 20s, he's younger than me. But who has seven? You can't do that. I mean,
you've got to take some responsibility.
His point was you shouldn't have drunk them. But when somebody's handing out espresso, once you've had a few of them, you forget, don't you? But other angry Christmases, I don't. I will almost certainly have got angry at other times over Christmas. But I remember being really annoyed at that, partly because I was just trapped in this little bathroom while everybody else, because they all came back. They did their mile walk across the cliff path, and they were all in there. There was music outside, but I couldn't even come out because I had to clean the bathroom down, and then I had to get clothes. Oh, no.
It's just the
moral of this story.
It's the shitting in your hat. I just can't get. Past
I didn't
that.
Shit in my hat. It went up. It just passed up. It went up the back and onto the back of the
not
hat.
Not even on the hat.
I was very sheepish. You know. Sometimes with your partner, you're quite sheepish. You know, sometimes you're quite bullish, aren't you? You kind of go, oh, "Will you, bloody hell, will you stop doing that? Will you do that?" I passed the hat out. I was totally naked, apart from the bin bag, yeah. And I passed this hat out and was really like reverted to. So I was. Would you mind washing my hat? She did. Bless God, bless her. You know.
Oh my God! Right.
Oh
well,
yeah, that was. Is that?
That's
that the kind
a good
of thing?
Answer. That was a good answer.
Is it? Yeah, what was the question again? I get angry remember. At Christmas. Have you ever got angry at Christmas, Trish?
I must have done.
You must have. You're a pernickety argumentative.
I think I'm now I'm quite calm. I used to have a big temper when I was a kid and like young man.
Did you?
Yeah, I just used to lose my temper. I'm sure, yeah. And occasionally I do.
What do you lose your temper about now, Freak? What kind,
well, only
what kind
like,
of...
If I'm, only now, and not recently, when the kids were little and we were getting no sleep.
That's tough, yeah, that's
and we'd
tough.
Just moved and we had a baby and a two-year-old. I'd get into arguments with my wife that would get... And you couldn't, even like 5 minutes after they'd finished, you couldn't remember what they were about because they weren't about anything. But I broke I had a really angry argument with my wife, and I can't remember what it was about. And I stormed out of the house, and I slammed the back gate as I was going to walk the dog or something, and I broke. Oh. Then I broke the gate, like it's a big gate, like it cracked. Yeah. And I walked around the field.
I don't think I've ever done that.
I walked around the field, and I was still angry when I got back.
The field.
I walked my field where I moved stones. And I was it still hadn't dissipated when I got back, but I couldn't tell you what that was even about. It was just, any time we have an argument, I now go, have we not slept last night? Oh, we didn't sleep last night. That's what this is. It's always that, because we get on pretty well. And, you know, I think any couple has arguments, but that when you're that angry that you're kind of going out. And that was what I was like. I remember once when I was a kid, I got angry with my parents, and I've put this in my radio sitcom, but I stormed out of the kitchen and slammed the door, and it went back on its hinges and fell off, and nearly fell on my mum, and would have basically, you know, injured her very badly. But my granddad saw it and stood up and caught it. But this wooden door was full. Just I slammed it, and it went, and then fell off its hinges and just nearly fell onto my mum. So like, imagine if that in some reality that door killed my mum, and I've had to live the rest of my life knowing that... I committed matricide.
Yeah, but it probably would. Well, unless it was a very heavy door, it probably would have just flattened her and not killed her.
Yeah.
I hospitalised my mother once.
Did you?
Not on purpose.
No.
I mean, this is. There's no way of saying this that sounds good. I hit her in the face with a cricket bat. I was. Not deliberately.
No, okay. That's
I'm going to say not deliberately every three sentences.
So nothing can be taken out of context.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way that somebody can't lift out some of this without me saying not deliberately. So I'm not even going to tell it. Because even if I say not deliberately after every word, still somebody could lift it out and fake it up and knock it up. No, I can't. Forget that. No. I've already said, it was an accident.
Yeah. I hit Anthony Sewell. I think it was the ant called Anthony Sewell. We were playing hockey, and I was quite good at hockey.
Oh, but it's not somebody famous.
No, Anthony Sewell. Right. I was at school, and I hit it high and smacked him right in the middle of his front teeth and knocked out his front teeth, but he'd already had his front teeth knocked out, so I just knocked out his false.
What, so you just knocked... Oh, you knocked out the false ones?
I knocked out his false teeth.
I thought I'd knocked out his false front teeth.
That he'd already had knocked out.
I thought you were going to say, luckily enough, he'd already had his front teeth knocked out.
Yeah.
So your back just swung through the gap.
Yeah, I think it was Andy.
Silently whooshed through the gap where his teeth were already missing.
He was a hard kid. He was a hard kid, and I was quite scared I was going to be murdered for doing that, even though it was an accident. But that's quite...
I might as well tell you my mother now. You're okay. Going for that one. So we were. I was about 7, 8 years old. We were waiting to go down. Okay. Yeah, we were waiting. Oh, no, it's all okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be telling it if it wasn't. We were waiting to go downtown. My mum was taking us down to town. She was taking me and my sister and my brother down to town. And we were just waiting to go. We were in the garden. We were bored. And I had this cricket bat. And my sister took a pair of underpants. My underpants. off the washing line and then like bowled them at me. And I was hitting them back to her. And then she bowled them at me this one time and I swung back. Exactly. And my mother was standing behind us.
Yeah.
And I looked around and her face had just opened from there to there. And we had to go to hospital and 7 stitches to put her mouth back together. It's not as funny now I say it like that.
No, but these things are, you know, it's
funny at the time.
I think it's interesting because you do, you know, as a family, you end up doing things to each other, you know, largely accidentally. That if they happened in any other situation, you would never see those people again. If something,
accidents happen.
Yeah,
they do happen.
They do.
I've got a lot of them. I've had a lot of them. I've had a lot of of accidents.
Well, look, Rod, I'm conscious that we've got... I mean, I think we could go on all night. We can if you want, but...
I don't mind. Whatever.
It's been really lovely to talk to you. So you're back on the road next year at some point with the Book of John?
That's March, I think. Yeah. I think at the moment we're aiming for March, but Book of John. Yeah, it's called the Book of John.
Good. I'm glad I got that right. And Froth is the podcast that you need more people to listen to so you can make some money from it.
Yeah, we're on episode 20, so it's early days.
Well, it is sort of interesting. A lot of people have started doing podcasts, especially this year. So it is it's a very crowded marketplace again.
I don't think we're that... it's not that bothered. Of course, we want it to be a success, but equally, we are sort of... doing it for fun, really.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very professional, though. I like the way you sum up what's happening. You've already recorded it. You have a nice intro where you kind of hit ahead to what's coming up and give some little clues of what's coming up. It's very professional.
It's quite well produced. I say it's quite well produced. It's produced, you know. It's well produced by Barry Castagnola, but it's more produced than a lot of podcasts, probably.
Sure.
You know, for better or worse, it is. Yeah, we put a bit of time into producing it, but that might not last.
And is there TV stuff on the horizon as well? Is there stuff carrying on, or is
just or is it all finished?
Or we're just going to see you doing work.
Or is it all dried up? Is it all fucking dried up? I've got a thing. As we're plugging stuff, I got a thing on Comedy Central starting in the new year called Growing Pains.
Okay.
Which is a lot more fun than it sounds. It was, it's basically me. It's like, do you know, I liked the old Room 101, you know, when you got to know a bit about people and it was quite intimate and personal and stuff. So it's that, but it's not that, but it's a chat show, but about people's teenagers. So it's Bill Bailey or Richard Ayoade or Sally Phillips or, you know, or Roisin Conti or whoever it is. You, if we have a second series, you know, obviously. But people talking about being a teenager. It's such a rich area.
Yeah.
And an interesting area and an intimate and personal area that is kind of, in many ways, missing from TV, I think, at the moment.
Sure. It seems to me that you're sort of moving. I mean, like a lot of your stand-up feels like a mixture of truth and fiction. You know, and knowingly, and I think, you know, but it feels like you're moving into more veracity in what you're doing and more and getting into sort of slightly deeper subjects and examining yourself a bit more. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's bang on, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's always my stuff started out as total nonsense, total surreal sort of storytelling nonsense, and then moved to be a bit more truthful, but with bits you weren't sure about. And now... Yeah, so it's always a mix of real and fantasy and true and not true, but it's definitely moving more into... it just gets a bit like that. You know, you've got to evolve, haven't you? You know, unless you're Bill Murray and that, you know, and maybe you don't want me to. Maybe you want me to...
I want you to be the guy arguing about sandwiches with the British Rail. That's what I want. Never change.
Yeah. Well, I am, you know, I am definitely the guy that will spend half an hour in front of a British Rail person arguing about an egg and cress sandwich. But there's probably more, as life goes on and you accumulate these experiences, you sort of want to talk about them a bit and it's cathartic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of melding truth and lies and nonsense and I think
comedy is good. You know, it's good for someone like you to talk about your shyness, for example. I know you're going to, there's other stuff, there's other sort of personal stuff that you're talking about in different shows as well. But, you know, I think it, because no one would think that looking at you. And, you know, and I think so any guy who's, you know, 6 foot tall, bluff, kind of funny guy is going to go, oh, I can be honest about, you know, because most men don't feel like that. And I think I, you know, that's sort of my little hobby horse at the moment is men not expressing themselves, and comedians do sort of.
Oh, you're gonna love the new documentary. I'm doing this. Have you got wind of that one? It's very much in the area of men not talking about stuff.
Yeah.
It's about fertility and infertility. Sure. So I'm editing that at the moment and doing the voiceover and stuff. So that's very much in that.
It's good, but I think someone like you doing it as well. You know, I think it's because. You know, you're seen as a regular guy, I think, you know, by most people. And it's not a snowflake. And you're not like being right on, you know, for the sake of being right on. You're just a regular person talking about your actual experiences. So I think that's good, whether it's infertility or shitting in your hat. I think it's a good thing that you've opened up.
I'm hoping that more people can come forward now who've shat so powerfully into a bin bag.
It's
that they went up their hat. I mean, that.
Fucking hell. I mean, you're tall as well. It's not like, for me, a hat isn't that far away from my ass. But your hat.
That is true. That is true. I am quite tall.
Yeah.
I am quite tall, but, and this is, I don't want to take anything away from my bottom, but I have got quite a short torso.
Okay.
So the shit didn't have that didn't far have that to travel up
well,
my back.
And
then that's full disclosure.
Okay. It makes it less funny, but.
Full disclosure, I've got a short
torso. It's good that you're being honest. I'll let you go, Rod.
I have got an incredibly long bottom, so it did have to travel all the way up there first. So it's back in the game. My bum is back in the game.
Look, I would love you to come and do one of these when we're back in front of an audience, if we can ever find a time when you're not working, because I think it's been lovely doing this with you remotely, but I think I've always wanted to get you into the Leicester Square Theatre. Or wherever, and do it live. Hopefully we'll be back in theatres next year and be able to do some stuff. But thank you so much for coming on. And do check out Rod's podcast next week. I'm on Tuesday next week, and I'm talking to Lou Conran. So thank you very much. All right, cheers. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you very, 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 very much. It's been a wonderful pleasure.
Cheers,
thank you
Rod.
So much.
Thank
cheers.
You. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Rod Gilbert. Thank you very much to Pest for providing this Christmassy music with sleigh bells in it. Ding, 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 ding. That was the sleigh bells there. Thank you very much. I'm indebted to my producer, director, and friend, Chris Evans. Not that one. And all of his family really are fantastic as well. Everyone who works for Go Faster Strike, we didn't get to spend too much time together this year. But thank you to Craig and Kinga and George, the incompetent sound man particularly. Thank you also to everyone at Acast for looking after us this year and helping us get through a difficult time. Thank you to everybody at the British Comedy Guide who are doing sterling work for us still with my more esoteric podcast, but you can also listen to this on that platform as well. Thank you also to Ben Walker, our usual producer, who hasn't had too much to do this year but has helped us with putting all the ads and everything into the podcast. So, this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to GoFasterStripe.com. You can buy lots of my downloads, DVDs, books, and also become a monthly badger. GoFasterStripe.com/badgers and help us make even more content in 2021. Let's hope we're allowed outside. Let's hope that we can do some Hellastapas in actual theatres. Imagine. All right. Cheers, kids. See you around.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer.
Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.